Hey, welcome back. Today, me and Seem are talking about sleep, some of its benefits, what happens when you don't get enough sleep, what is the causes of sleep deprivation, and how you can improve sleep.
And this is part one. Part two is going to be on my channel.
Yeah. So this is, again, a two-part episode. We're going to start here and continue at Seem's channel. So what are some of the benefits of sleep? Why do we need sleep?
Well, I mean, we should maybe start, what is sleep and what's the role or purpose of sleep, because when you look at, you know, evolutionarily, then it's very interesting that humans and, you know, other, pretty much every other animal, any other life form has some form of a sleep cycle, because, you know, in nature it's very dangerous to sleep. Like, you could be eaten by predators, you can miss out on like some feeding opportunities, and it's generally like very like a gamble of, you know, actually spending many hours in this hibernation. And the duration of sleep is also pretty interesting. Like, you know, most humans sleep on average 7 to 8 hours, or they should sleep. And like, even most of the animals also sleep at least, you know, 5 or 6 hours. I'm not sure exactly how many hours like moose or bears sleep on a daily basis, but yeah, like, it's still like many hours that you're spending, you know, unconscious, where you're very vulnerable to all these, you know, predators or whatever. And that, you know, goes to show how important sleep actually is. If evolution has, you know, pretty much every life form has put to place this period of time where they're sleeping, which is very dangerous in a lot of ways. But it obviously has, like, you know, very crucial and essential roles in health and, you know, optimal functioning, which, you know, we can talk about what they are.
Psychologically, sleep is an altered state of mind. It's still considered a state of mind. There are some studies that are measuring the attitudes of people for sleep. They haven't conducted that many studies on women, but on men. Men think that it's like a waste of time because you're not doing anything. Whereas, you know, now we know that during sleep, there are so many processes happening inside, like biological processes, that it's like, it's still you are still doing things, you're just not conscious of what you are doing for your health and well-being during your sleep. So I guess that's like a good point to consider, that sleep is definitely not a waste of time.
Yeah.
What are some of the benefits of sleep? Let's start with the body and go to the brain or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much number one is physical repair and rejuvenation. Like, your body is repairing itself when it's sleeping, and it's building muscle when you're sleeping, it's burning fat when you're sleeping, like bone density, like, yeah, pretty much growth, all things happen in your sleep. You're not like, you know, literally growing and literally building muscle or whatever and repairing during the daytime, because, you know, all the energy is then directed to staying awake, which is also very energy, like, laborsome. So that's when you're sleeping, that's where your, you know, other functions consume less energy, so that's why your body is repairing and growing in that state. And if you, let's say, look at some of the studies that show what happens when you don't get enough sleep, then pretty much all the health goes worse. Like, you have higher blood sugar, higher blood pressure, higher inflammation, lower immunity, muscle loss, fat gain, and many of these physical consequences of not getting enough sleep. And like, sleeping less than 5 hours, that has been shown to increase the risk of mortality from all causes by up to 15%. And that's generally not, you know, that's kind of like the cutoff point where all these, you know, most of the health problems come. If you sleep, you know, let's say, you know, you sleep a little bit longer than 5 hours, like, but not the complete optimal amount, which is in general like 7 to 8 hours, then you're still, you know, not optimal in terms of your functioning, your physical functioning. You still have like somewhat of a, you know, worse biomarkers, and you still have a bit of a weaker immune system, etc. Whereas if you sleep generally like what the optimal amount is said to be, like 7 to 8 hours, but it can be also higher, then that's where at least like your biomarkers will be more optimized. Granted that everything else is also, you know, well structured, like your diet and exercise. If you, like, you know, sleep 8 hours or 9 hours, but you don't exercise and you're overweight, then yeah, your biomarkers are still going to be worse. But it's just, you know, an additional, you know, barrier or an additional obstacle on your way to becoming optimally healthy.
Mm, yeah, Yeah, there is a lot of things for immunity. For example, yeah, you said about the inflammation and those like less than 6 hours of sleep has been clearly linked to increased risk for cancer. Mm. And that's why I think lack of sleep or sleep deprivation is also amongst the shift work defined as a carcinogen.
Mm.
So there was this actually one study where people were to put on this like kind of sleep restriction schedule where they slept 4 to 6 hours for 14 days. And no, actually this was a different study. They slept 6 hours for 1 week. And for that already, their inflammation markers increased significantly up to the point where they were like, you know, more prone or more at the risk for disease.
Yeah.
And after that, when they did a recovery sleep weekend of 10 hours a night, they returned back to baseline.
Mm. So it is possible to make up for some bad sleep. Some like I've heard some people say that, yeah, you literally can't ever catch up on the lost sleep. Like,
I guess it depends on how long have you been sleep deprived.
Mm.
But like this kind of short-term sleep restriction seems to be, in terms reversible. Of some biomarkers here, reversible, whereas, you know, the brain is way more delicate in that sense that even one night sleep deprivation will have quite an impact on the brain and the performance, you know, like psychomotor vigilance and stuff like that.
What's the brain consequences then?
That's a huge topic. Like, sleep is such a key time for the brain recovery, rejuvenation. There are like few key things that are happening in the brain. And the first thing that I think is the most important, it's the brain detox.
Mm.
So basically, we accumulate toxins in our system and we always have some amyloid beta in our brain. It's like a normal part, basically our physiology. But when it accumulates in the brain and it's not cleared out, we get more risk for getting an Alzheimer's, for example.
Mm.
And so during the night, there is this specific system called glial system or glymphatic system, sorry, which is made of glial cells and cerebrospinal fluid. So this glymphatic system comes from basically glia and lymphatic system that is in the body. And these glial cells shrink during the night so that there would be more cerebrospinal fluid going to the space in the brain and basically clearing out this beta amyloid and other toxins in the brain. Sleep deprivation and accumulation of the beta amyloid is clearly linked then to the risk of brain aging. So sleep is pretty much brain longevity tool. Another thing is that during the sleep, your emotional reactivity system is basically calming down. It's shown that like our amygdala during the, when we live our lives, live the day, you know, we get more nervous system reactivity and there are things and ideas accumulating in our mind. And, you know, we become a bit more reactive during the day. So it's called this kind of like amygdala hyperreactivity. And also probably because our sleep pressure increases and just like, you know, body gets more distressed. So during the night, this amygdala hyperreactivity will return back to the baseline again. Even one night sleep restriction will make your amygdala to be more reactive. It can be up to 40% more reactive. So you are like way more likely to get alarmed by, I don't know. Well, yesterday morning I saw a mouse. So luckily I slept well, but I was still a little bit like, you know, of course, nervous about it. You know, if I didn't sleep well, and I saw that, and I would probably be scared a lot more. But it also, you know, applies to anything, work, social situations,
you
whatever.
You get more angry at stuff and more triggered
More
easily.
More triggered easily, more fearful, more like self...
Stressed out.
Turned all the time. Yeah, yeah, and turned inwards, because stress is pretty much the state where we are not that social, not that... cooperative. So you get more like turned inwards. There are also studies that show that if you don't get sleep, your memory for negative things is better the next day. So basically during that day, you scan threats and you pay more attention to threats. So what they have done here is basically they show people pictures of happy faces or angry faces or neutral faces, and people will remember the negative faces better.
And will they like see more negative faces in the clouds or something like?
Yeah, they judge neutral faces to be more negative. You know, your threat sensitivity is hyper tuned. So yeah, I guess lack of sleep, you could say lack of sleep turns you into more pessimistic. Because of what's happening in your brain and in your nervous system. It's not your thinking pattern per se, but imagine, having a long sleep restriction. You get like a feedback loops all the time. And then you start behaving, you know, more negatively because you're also more sensitive to all the threats you think. You interpret them maybe wrongly.
What I've actually seen is that they sometimes use short sleep restriction for depression because it increases BDNF in the brain. So like in some short amounts, it can have like maybe some benefits or like the small stress to the brain.
I mean, in depression, there is, if I remember correctly, there is usually too much REM sleep. So if you restrict the sleep, you would probably balance this a little bit out.
Maybe. But obviously over long term, it can also cause depression then because of the same things.
Yeah, well, sleep restriction is pretty much linked to all psychiatric disorders. So I wouldn't go and try to, you know, cure depression, at least without any clinical surveillance or anything like that, with just not sleeping. I think that would make things worse for sure, because actually, in depression, you have this negativity bias already. So you're gonna increase that potentially.
Double negative is a positive in mathematics, as I remember.
Yeah, okay. Don't try this at home, though.
That's what I remember from high school.
Yeah. So a third thing in a brain is related to hippocampus and memory. So basically, during the day, you learn information, you live life, so you get both episodic and semantic and even procedural memories. Let's say if you go to the gym, so basically related to your movement, your knowledge, and your experiences. And all of this is memory input for your brain. And during the day, the brain does get a lot of information in. It doesn't really stay training or rehearsing the information unless you deliberately are doing it yourself. But what happens during the night is that these similar memory traces will activate during the night. And the hippocampus in your brain, which is in the middle of the brain, helps to transfer the memories from the, like, the short-term storage to the long-term storage. But yeah, revising things just before the bed is like one of the best things that you can do. And especially if you have an exam or if you are going to give a speech, if you have learned some material and tomorrow, let's say you have, I don't know, a podcast about it or things like that, you need to represent it at work, do it in the evening and then sleep. Because many people, especially students, they cram information during the night and they don't sleep. So some of this information will, of course, stay in their short-term memory, but it's clearly shown that it's way more efficient if you sleep in between and let the memories to consolidate. And this also helps you to store it like for a longer term. So if you want to remember it for, you know, next week or in 2 weeks, then that's more effective.
Nice.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, like, you know, if you don't sleep, then your, like, this cognitive performance also decreases.
Yeah.
So you're not able to really remember things more and your focus and productivity drop significantly as well.
Yeah. And one thing, a big thing is not only work performance, but like psychomotor vigilance. So meaning that how fast you can react to some stimuli. And this is a big thing in the traffic.
Yeah. You are just, you know, you can even fall down the stairs or something else, like you're not as supple or fast with the motions. And that, like, yeah, I think I remember some statistic that, you know, like one every four or one driver in five has like fallen asleep while driving or something like that.
That's huge.
I mean, like, it's it can be just even like a micro sleep. Like, these micro sleeps are also very like this consequence of sleep deprivation, that you even like a few seconds, you can, like, you know, turn off for a moment.
Well, what have you noticed? Like, do you have a specific effect that you always see when you don't sleep enough? I mean, you don't sleep long, like usually. Like, you can get away with way less sleep.
Yeah, and, well, the biggest I can like function. I can be normal and healthy if I don't sleep the optimal amounts. So if I sleep even like 5 hours, then I'm pretty like normal, okay. But I, obviously, like, I can't be at my peak, especially in terms of strength and gym. So if I don't sleep, you know, at least 7 hours, then I'm usually not getting like stronger at the gym either. And yeah, that's usually like the biggest, one of the biggest like plateaus for my strength development is that, yeah, I'm not able to like get stronger if I don't sleep at least, you know, 7 to 8 hours regularly. And from a mental side, I mean, sometimes, yeah, like if I sleep, yeah, like very little, like 5 hours, 4 hours, then I'll also have like some tiredness and like lack of focus. But that's easy to fix with like a nap. I think it's very easy to fix or overcome this cognitive deficit with like a nap or something like that. But you can't really, you know, be strong again if you just take like a 20-minute nap. But you can, like, there are like some NASA studies that the pilots or astronauts, like, they take a nap and they can restore their cognition by like back to 100% pretty fast after a sleep restriction. So yeah, it's very relatively easy to, you know, be alert again, but yeah, like the underlying, you know, biomarkers and you know, the brain obviously and the strength, that's much more impaired even after a short sleep restriction.
One thing that they find in studies is that people are not good at self-evaluating, and I think this is a big thing, especially if you think about, you know, strength or traffic or just how much can you do at work, how much can you push yourself that day. Like, if you have a long-term sleep restriction, let's say even 2 weeks of 6 hours per night, you become blind to your actual performance. So you don't judge yourself to be sleepy anymore. So you kind of get used to the state. It's similar that in stress, if people are chronically stressed, they lose the insight that they are stressed because they are so used to that. And I think this also applies the other way around. So if you sleep well, and then one night you didn't get that 8 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep, or it wasn't restorative, you can really feel it.
Yeah, that's true. Like, your brain is compensating for the like suboptimal sleep that you get all the time, and then you're like, yeah, you notice less, like there's less contrast.
Yeah.
But, and like, and if you do get like a good night's sleep, then you do notice as well. Like, even if you sleep like 7 hours, like, wow, I slept so good. But it's like 7 isn't like, you know, actually like the most optimal amount. Like 8 or something like that could even be better. Like, a really restorative sleep is like, you know, 8 hours probably.
Yeah.
8 to 9 even.
Well, the time and then what happens within the sleeping hours. Like, you know, we talked about the depression. So some depressed people actually get too much sleep, but they would get too much REM and very little deep sleep, for example.
That also applies to like cancer patients or whatever, like other hospitalized people. Like, they also sleep 10, 12 hours. And that's why like this amount is actually also linked to like 45% higher risk of mortality, because the people who sleep, you know, 12 hours, they are usually like cancer patients or who have like some other disease. So it's not like, you know, I mean, normal people probably wouldn't need, or they even can't sleep 12 hours or 10 hours in most cases.
Yeah, let's talk about the sleep structure and hours and kind of like what we want to achieve during night. What is like the optimal healthy sleep? What does it even mean to sleep well? So yeah, what are the stages of sleep? What happens during those sleeping hours that we do?
Yeah, well, the general recommendation is for adults to sleep about 7 to 8 hours, maybe even 9, up to that. But, you know, the quality of it matters more, and like the amount of different like types of sleep. So your sleep is divided into, you like optimally you want to have like 5 sleep cycles. And one cycle lasts 90 minutes and it's comprised of multiple parts. Like, there's You know, easily you can say that there's light sleep, deep sleep, and REM sleep, but there's also like the light sleep is composed of like NREM1 and NREM2 and NREM3 even. So there's non-rapid eye movement, and then there's NREM4, which is deep sleep, and then is REM sleep. So there's like, yeah, some people say it's five stages, but I think for simplicity, you can say there's like light sleep, deep sleep, and REM sleep. And yeah, you know, when you're awake, then you're in light sleep. You drift into deep sleep around 45 minutes or something like that. You stay there for maybe until 60 minutes or something. And then you go into REM sleep, which is very close to like wakefulness. So actually this rapid eye movement sleep where you're dreaming, your eyes are running around in the back of your head, and you see dreams. That's where the memory consolidation happens. Whereas in deep sleep, you get most of the like physical repair and growth aspect. So yeah, like one cycle lasts 90 minutes. You should get like 4 to 5 cycles per day, which will total in about, 8 hours, somewhere around there. But obviously, like theoretically, you could have it a bit shorter, but I don't think it's, you know, the light sleep is still important as well. So you don't want to like completely be zero light sleep. Although like, you know, most of the actual repair happens in deep sleep and REM sleep.
So this is like what we want to sort of get different sleep stages, enough percentages. What are the amounts that we want to get different sleep stages?
Well, I think for deep sleep it's around like 2 to 3 hours is like an optimal amount. REM sleep also maybe 1.5 to 2 hours or 2.5 at most. And light sleep is said to be like around like 40% of the total sleep time. So maybe again like 3 hours, 2 to 3 hours, something like that. And you don't want to, you know, if you do wake up every once in a while, I think like waking up once or twice a night is fine. Like it's normal. Maybe you go to the bathroom or maybe it's just, randomly you wake up, but obviously you don't want to stay awake for like 30 minutes in the middle of the night and then fall back asleep. That's not generally like a good thing. There's maybe like some things that you can do to help with that, like psychological tools mostly, but like, you know, you shouldn't be like relatively awake at night.
One sleep pillar that they recommend as a good sleep is the consistency. So that you wouldn't wake up. So there is the duration of the sleep, there is the consistency of the sleep, there is the quality of the sleep, short sleep onset latency, and regular sleep times. And one thing about sleep onset latency, which means the minutes that you take to fall asleep, is that it's okay if it's 5 to 15 minutes. Actually, if you fall asleep faster, or 10 to 20 minutes even, so somewhere between, 5 to 20 minutes, if you fall asleep super fast, that's actually usually an indicator that you have sleep disorder, or you have something, you have daytime excessive fatigue. So I actually checked, many people want to sleep fast, like one of the most Googled or like search is how to sleep fast or how to sleep under 2 minutes. And it's more like you don't actually want to do that in the evening. Like naturally, you should be kind of drifting off to sleep slowly and going to this phase of sleeping spindles and then kind of just going to the sleep phases and drifting off to the deep sleep. So it's okay, like, you shouldn't be worried if you are not, from the moments you close your eyes, that if you're not falling asleep instantly.
But, like 30 minutes is probably too long to fall asleep.
Sure. So, couple of things about sleep benefits more. One thing is the brain structure and the neuroplasticity. So we talked about the memory thing. The hippocampus is also important for neuroplastic changes in the brain and is upregulated during the night. So there are, hippocampus actually have an area which have stem cells that have the ability to, you know, grow and migrate and become part of the functional networks in the brain. And it also creates new synapses and, you know, nerve cells, those dendritic trees. So that's the time when hippocampus is working on these processes quite actively. So like the brain growth and neuroplasticity and the maintenance of the brain structure is important, as well as it's building myelin. So myelin is the white matter in the brain, and this starts to degrade in conditions like MS, for example. And the consequence when there are not enough white matter in the brain is that the signals travel slower. So your reaction times are slower. So just like a building of the brain, like in the body, you said, is the time when you build the muscles. Sleep is the time when you build the brain as well. Just thought to mention, because I forgot. And then during deep sleep, it sensitizes again the receptors that respond to certain neurotransmitters. So the neurotransmitters that keep you alert during the day are pretty much like noradrenaline, dopamine, serotonin. During sleep, you regain the sensitivity of these receptors that the neurotransmitters bind to. So your next day, your brain needs less or normal amounts of the neurotransmitters. Whereas if you lack sleep, if you are sleep deprived, the receptors in your brain are not that sensitive to react to norepinephrine, noradrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, histamine, which can make you feel more like sluggish and fatigued. So that's one of the great benefits of sleep as well.
And caffeine works by, you know, blocking some of the adenosine receptors, which makes you feel that you're not tired. And in reality, you're just masking the feeling of fatigue. And over time, you're just eventually going to crash.
Yeah, if you compensate your sleep deprivation with caffeine, which, by the way, does increase your psychomotor vigilance. Mm. There are studies that show that, you know, if you would if you had sleep restriction and you had to drive somewhere the next day, then I think caffeine would be a good idea. Because that will improve your reaction times. But you're not improving your psychomotor or psychological or cognitive performance by somehow restoring your brain. You're improving it by basically increasing your cortisol, causing different kind of things to your adenosine receptors, as I say, blocking the adenosine receptors and just like disrupting the normal functioning of the brain. Or like making it more hyperreactive even.
Well, like, yeah, I guess, you know, it's better to drink some caffeine than to be sleep deprived and getting an injury or something.
Yeah, like. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Of course, yeah.
But obviously, so, over long term, you have to look at what is, you know, the cause of the fatigue and why you're not getting the good sleep.
Yeah. So let's talk about sleep deprivation then. Why it might happen and what are some of the, like, fixes. So there are couple different types of sleep deprivation. So either you are like, you're not getting the sleep stages that you're supposed to, you're constantly waking up during the night, or you're just not sleeping enough. What can be some of the causes of poor sleep?
Yeah, I think problem usually is some, like, let's say stress or work-related things. Like, people wake up early usually because they have to go to work, or they stay up late because, you know, they're backlogging their, let's say, downtime. What I've noticed, yeah, like, some people may, you know, they work a lot, they come home later, and they're just, you know, de-stressing from the work by, you know, entertainment or something, then they stay up late because of that. So they go to bed later than they should because they're, you know, de-stressing and soothing themselves from the work that they do, and whatever stress they have with, like, entertainment or something else that just keeps them up for too long. And in the morning, yeah, they just wake up early because they have to drive somewhere, or the work starts at 8 a.m. So, yeah, I think that's generally, like, the number one cause of not sleeping enough and not getting, like, this parasympathetic dominance that you need for falling asleep and staying asleep.
Yeah. So lifestyle, modern world,
that's the root
entertainment.
Cause. Yeah, that's the root cause. Yeah, obviously, like watching TV is a cause itself, but the reason why people, or many people, I think, do choose to go for the entertainment and staying up late is because of the, you know, the stress that they're experiencing. So it's like a coping mechanism a little bit.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Kind of paradoxical that these things that we most commonly use for relaxation and recovery is actually then bombarding our relaxation and recovery because they take...
And alcohol as well, kind of similar. Yeah, alcohol is... you know, used for relaxation and calming the nerves, but it does disrupt the sleep. It, like, reduces your deep sleep and gets you more REM sleep, like, messes up the sleep cycles, and you're not really getting, like, that restorative sleep.
Yeah, so things like that. Also, of course, the lights that we currently use in our houses, which are very artificial, too bright. Not many people have... I think still majority of the people have just, like, normal lights, instead of some smart lights that change according to this day. And so they cannot really use the benefit of circadian lighting, for example, for their benefit in sleep. And this is one of the big things that, of course, is talked a lot, that blue lights in the evening will disrupt the processes in your brain, like the melatonin production that is supposed to make you prepared for sleep. And that's, one of the things. Even when you wake up during the night and you go into the bathroom, let's say, and you get this blue light exposure, it affects to the brain circadian system. And that's actually linked to depression.
Artificial light at night is also linked to obesity and diabetes. And
reduced dopamine in the brain. How can things like obesity or diabetes, are they like causes of insomnia or are they consequences of it?
I would think more of a consequence than a cause. Like, you know, if you're overweight, then you may get more sleep apnea, this thick neck, and you're snoring more and you're not really getting the quality sleep. And definitely, like, short sleep promotes weight gain and diabetes and hypertension and things like that. So, yeah, I think chicken and an egg... problem, but mostly like a consequence of short sleep. Bad sleep or sleep deprivation raises your blood sugar, makes you somewhat more insulin resistant, makes you burn more fat, makes you burn more muscle instead of fat, so and reduces your muscle mass, and induces also this leptin resistance slightly, which means that you're like less satiated from the food that you eat. So like if you're stressed out and you're sleep deprived, then you're like... unconscious calorie consumption increases by up to like 500 or something like that. So you can just eat more calories. You're less satiated. You eat more junk food and you're looking for these comfort foods and cravings.
So sleep is clearly important and sleep problems are super common. There are like stats, but probably there are underestimations usually that 70% of the people have some sort of sleep problems during their life. I would imagine that that's more like 100% just because, you know, just our biology sometimes creates sleep problems, especially if you're sick or something. So what are some of the main key things that we can do to improve the sleep problems? I would actually like to start with the fact that you should find out the cause of the sleep problem, like become analytical before starting to, I don't know, take a bunch of supplements and... you know, do some sleep meditations and stuff, just kind of like thinking what is actually causing my problems of sleep and what is the problem of sleep? Is it I'm not falling asleep, I'm not sleeping long, I'm not getting all the stages? They're also measuring the sleep and kind of quantifying the whole sleep system.
The cause, like I said, can be mostly like stress and work-related things. Like, I think, you know, being a parent or having a child can also be stressful in the sense, or you know, the causes, they you know, the stress and disrupts the sleep cycle by you waking up, etc. So it's still like, you know, oxidative stress and physiological stress on the system, yeah, I mean, you have to kind of, in that case, you have to learn how to, you know, be less stressed out before going to bed and have like some sort of event where you de-stress, which, you know, can be... exercise is a good way actually to do that. and spending time in nature, walking, you know, doing something else that is, you know, helping you to relax and, you know, calm down without inherently, you know, going for these quick entertainment and quick, like, yeah, quick pleasures or something like that, that's kind of healthier and more like over long term, better, like more sustainable in a sense. If you use the entertainment, then you have to keep getting the entertainment to de-stress. But if you, you know, actually learn how to manage your stress better, then you're actually, you're protecting yourself against getting stressed out in the future as well. So like exercise and mindfulness practices. Yeah, like definitely you don't want to do anything very physically intense before bed, but, you know, regular exercise at any time, like overall, like a lifestyle that has exercise in it improves sleep quality and makes you fall asleep better. Like if you have exercise, then it increases your adenosine, makes you more tired, and helps you to fall asleep at night. And yeah, sleep quality is generally also better in people who exercise, almost like in a linear fashion, that the more they exercise, then the better they sleep.
Yeah, there was this study in which every 1 hour of moderate to vigorous exercise during the day, it made the people fall asleep 18 minutes faster and increased the sleep length for 10 minutes. So that would be a good tool. And in the evening, I think like one of the things, even if you were to do yoga, like yoga is pretty relaxing, you probably wouldn't want to go to a yoga studio that's in a sports hall that have these bright LED lights at 8 p.m. So then just be mindful about like, is your habit the sort of like constructed in a way that it's not causing you more stress or circadian disturbances, which we're going to talk about in the second part, then it's actually benefiting your relaxation and this parasympathetic activation.
Yeah.
So what are some other ways to activate the parasympathetic nervous system before sleep?
You know, you want to avoid any like very artificial stimulation or like the very bright lights or obviously they can suppress melatonin, but the lights, I think they also cause like, you know, oxidative stress and like make you more alert in that sense. Looking at some sort of, you know, news or action movie can also like mentally wire you up. Caffeine in your system obviously keeps you in the sympathetic state. So if you drink coffee too late, then that keeps you up.
In terms of light, I think that's one of the first ones actually to optimize. Because your brain is super reactive to light, and your retinal ganglion cells, which are actually brain cells outside of the skull, are all the time relaying messages to the brain that whether it's time to be awake, it's if it's a morning, if it's a day, if it's an evening, like they have their own circadian system, the system to basically alert the brain what kind of mental state you're supposed to be in. So at the evening, you know, if you get blue light, your brain will think that now it's daytime. So blue light suppresses melatonin production up to 3 hours. Green light suppresses it up to 1.5 hours. And the sources of blue light are like computer, phone screen, television, ring light. Yes, even bright ceiling light. And some ways to fix and optimize that is, well, we use smart lights. So we have like lights that we can change the tone of the light. And we can put it to red, we can dim it down. And we use salt lamps. Candlelight does not affect the melatonin production, but burning candles produce this toxin in the air. So I wouldn't burn a lot of candles in the evening. Rather use some sort of safe, non-flickering smart light system. And one other thing, which is less talked about, but just like make it dim. That's also super important for the brain.
And yeah, like red light as well. Like if it's like, even if it's red light, but it's too bright, then it can still suppress melatonin. So it has to be still like dimmer. Yeah. And when you are sleeping, then like pitch black darkness is the best. Even like sleep masks are good. And like, yeah, like blackout curtains are probably like the best option for preventing, like even in the summer, you don't want to have like, you know, the morning sun waking you up too early, like at 4 a.m. It's not like the best time to wake up.
Yeah, if you live somewhere in the north, for example, where the duration of the day varies a lot, you need to sort of control the light sources so that you would be able to maintain some sort of regular circadian rhythm. The it's actually shown, there was this study from US students. During the day, they have 16 hours of light, and during the night, they have 8 hours of light.
Mm.
And it was shown that the people naturally shift to a 30-minute later circadian rhythm during the winter time, which was surprising because you would assume that in the summertime, when it's like more light, and they would be later awake. But it was actually in the winter when the sun sets earlier. And this was mediated by, I think, the morning light exposure. Like, if they don't get enough light during the day, then it's harder to fall asleep. And that's also one important thing. Like, you don't want to... Blue light is not bad. You want to just get it at the right times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some other things besides light. Light is what you eat and when you eat. And in the evening, like, you want to stop eating a few hours before bed.
Mm.
Maybe you want to take some, like, chamomile tea is very good in the evening. That's, like, very calming and soothing as a supplement. And maybe there are some other sleep supplements or nutrients. What are your favorites?
Glycine. Glycine is a inhibitory neurotransmitter that makes you more calm and relaxed and puts the brakes on your mental nervous system activity and mental running.
Glycine is actually a neuromodulator, just a little addition to that. It can be both excitatory or inhibitory.
Mm. But most cases it's kind of, makes you more calm and relaxed. It lowers your body temperature, which then helps with the melatonin production. And it helps with like aspects of, let's say, OCD. So like if you have like OCD brain, then in studies, taking glycine helps with that slightly of, becoming less OCD and reducing this, let's say, super excitatory and super anxious mental activity. And I think like glycine taking that like 3 to 5 grams before bed, like 1 hour before bed, is a good one to help with that and calming you down. Some other ones I like is obviously just melatonin in some smaller amounts. And that's like a good way to pretty much like prime your body to fall asleep easier. And within small doses, it's also like an antioxidant. And
We did a podcast with Dr. Carrie Jones, and she basically told that human brain makes 0.3 milligrams of melatonin, whereas the supplements are most like 1 milligram or 2 milligrams, even up to 5 milligrams. So they're like just way too high considering the natural production of melatonin in the brain. So short term, this kind of small microdoses would be better if you use melatonin. Magnesium is something that many people find useful. It actually reduces the nervous system reactivity. It literally blocks like the receptors where calcium would go into the nerve cell and activate or excite the nerve cells. So magnesium helps naturally to calm down the cells inside the nervous system. And then some like evening habits, I think, are good to make like an evening routine, that your brain links these certain behaviors and actions to that time of going to the bed. So like every time before bed, you have the same cup of chamomile tea. And then around the same time you start, brushing your teeth, and maybe you stretch a bit, maybe you do a short meditation and just start unwinding and relaxing. And when you repeat that and you go to bed, your brain already knows that, this is the sleeping routine. So it starts already activating those sleep-related processes. And then optimizing the bedroom so that you wouldn't keep like your laptop there anymore in the evening if you tend to keep it there, or there wouldn't be anything that alerts your mind. Laptops, I think, and phones are those ones that people usually use a lot at work, for example. So work-related cues. So remove everything of those in the bedroom. And if you do have like your office in your bedroom or whatever, you live in a dorm, then just, covering them with a blanket would be a good also sleep routine to yourself. even the thoughts that you think before bed are quite important. Like, you wouldn't want to think anything that increases your cortisol and makes you feel stressed. So if you find that you have a hard time to fall asleep because you think about work, or you think about worries, or you get stressed, then just thinking about something that you feel grateful for, maybe reading some good mood book, or having some sort of evening meditation routine that you know is gonna calm down your nervous system. Like, I've heard many people use loving kindness meditation, and that's also one of my favorites if I really feel like I cannot fall asleep. So I guess here were the first part. I think we can continue this in your channel. We talk about circadian rhythms. And
yeah, more like the hormones and different like circadian rhythm aspects of the sleep.
Yes. So see you there.